If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God. Welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Jawbid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We're going to talk about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. And I'd like to begin our episode with this question, Sheikh, if you don't mind. What is the law or jurisprudential rule about Muslims, in fact, eating or using some of the food that are served, in fact, in non-Muslim restaurants?
Well, it is a very important question, since we know that there are a lot of Muslims living in the West. They usually end up going to to restaurants belonging to non-Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
So it's necessary for them to learn the rules, mm-hmm, and the Sharia point of view.
Yes.
When it comes to whether one is allowed to eat the food that is served by non-Muslim restaurants or not.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, generally speaking, the scholars have said that it is permissible to eat the food that does not contain meat. Okay.
Yes.
And it's also permissible to eat the food that is that's touched by a Christian or a Jewish, let's say, chef or cook or staffer working in the restaurant. If his hand comes in touch with the food served by them to the clients,
mm-hmm,
it's still permissible to eat that food.
Because they are people of the book.
They are people of the book, and the people of the book, Ahli Kitab, are pure, ritually pure. Now, when it comes to food that contains meat, of course, it's not permissible to eat that food unless one is 100% sure that the meat is halal.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's necessary to investigate. If one is willing to eat that, the meat, okay.
Mm.
Of course, in such restaurants, there are foods or meals served, and they are especially for vegetarians.
Yes.
You can eat the fish. You can eat fish,
yes,
which has scales, because fish are not supposed to be slaughtered, okay. If they are hunted.
Or eggs, for example.
Or eggs, yes. And okay, there are people saying, okay, I live in the West. If I don't eat meat, then I will have a problem.
Yeah,
maybe
I will be feeble.
Weak, and then I will develop some kind of diseases and complications.
Yes.
Of course, they bring up this excuse. If that is the case, okay, there are some
Muslim restaurants.
There are Muslim restaurants, and also fish is there. Fish is the best food to eat.
Yes.
And fish, one should make sure that the fish has scales. If it does have scales, then it's okay to eat, even from the hand of a non-Muslim. Okay, from the hand, as long as the fish has scales. And then when it comes to other rules applying to Muslims going to non-Muslim restaurants, of course, they should make sure that there is no alcohol served on the same table at which they sit.
Yes.
Okay, it's absolutely forbidden to eat, to drink, to sit at a table on which alcohol is served.
Mm-hmm, I see. Sheikh Jawbid, a very quick question. Does it matter what denomination that particular Muslim, in fact, running the restaurant or butchery, for example, is following? Like, does he have to be a Shia or Sunni or whatever denomination?
It makes no difference as long as someone recites takbir and believes in the oneness of God, believes in the prophethood of mm-hmm. the last prophet of Islam, then he is considered to be Muslim.
I see.
And it makes no difference what denomination he comes from.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much, Sheikh. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, Sheikh Javid, we know that it's one of the actually rudimentary laws in every risala and jurisprudential laws or the books and manual written on it that, you know, Muslims and especially we are talking about the Shiite Muslims, that they have to follow a religious scholar who is the most knowledgeable, right?
Right.
What if they can't find or they don't have any religious scholar to follow, but what happens to the deeds they do? I mean, the actions, the acts, and whatever they do, like, for example, when they pray, they fast, and so on and so forth, without having a religious scholar to follow?
Well, there are three ways of practicing Islamic laws or putting Islamic laws into practice.
Right.
One is to follow a mujtahid, and that's the most important and the easiest way to practice Islam.
Right.
There are two other ways which are also allowed by Shia scholars, saying that, okay, if you can exercise precaution, that is, you need to do it, okay? And if you don't want to follow a religious authority, you can and you should exercise precaution, ihtiyat, of course. And ihtiyat is the most difficult way of practicing Islam, because it needs, first of all, knowledge. Knowledge of what is precautionary, what is not precautionary.
Yes.
What should one do in certain scenarios, in certain cases. So I can give you the example of someone who misses a prayer during a journey. And also when he comes back home, he misses the prayer. So if you are practicing ihtiyat, then you must offer both full and shortened prayers, both complete and shortened prayers. But if you follow a mujtahid, the mujtahid says that if you offer one of them, it's sufficient. For example, if you offer the full prayers, it's okay, it's sufficient for the shortened prayers. There's no need to offer the shortened prayers. This is the ihtiyat, is the second way and the second solution.
Right.
And then we have the third way, and the third way is to become a mujtahid yourself. Okay. If you are not, if you don't want to be a follower, if you don't want to take action, take precaution, then you need to be a mujtahid. You need to engage in studying Islamic laws, getting in knowledge, experience, wisdom, and know-how. Of course, the knowledge see and understand for yourself whether something is halal or haram.
Is it possible actually to become a religious scholar without going to a seminary?
It might be possible in this time and
age. Like only through research?
But no, it's not, because there are a lot of prerequisites, a lot of, you know...
You need a teacher and educational system.
Educational, of course. You need to, for example, be knowledgeable in Nahw and Sarf and synthesis, what do you call it? Arabic grammar, Arabic language. And then you have to know علم الرجال, علم الدراية, علم البداية, all of these sciences are necessary. And also علم التفسير, knowledge of exegesis.
Right.
All of these are prerequisites. And then after you gain knowledge of all these branches of knowledge, then you will need to study fiqh, Islamic jurisprudence. Islamic jurisprudence.
Right.
And you must exert all kinds of pressure, whatever you have in your capacity, to drive Islamic laws, to understanding Islamic laws, and to practice Islamic laws.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much, Javid. Let's take a break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad Hossein, this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javid, I know that if there is a barrier on our skin, especially the arms and the feet, for example, when making wudu, you need to remove all of those barriers.
Right.
But what about the rings? Because people are wearing rings. Yes. Of different kind and stones. So is it necessary actually to take off the rings and then make the wudu, for example, because your fingers, in fact, are somehow or parts of your fingers, you are somehow, what you may call it, obstructed by the rings. So is it necessary to remove the rings, or you can do it one way or another, like by removing, for example, or moving the rings,
yes,
here and there, up and down, yes, somehow?
I believe rings do not form an impediment.
Mm.
Yes, they do not obstruct water from reaching the skin. Just like you said, if you push it up and down, the water will reach the skin. And if one is sure that water reaches the skin, there is no need for taking it off. It is okay. And of course, there is no objection to keeping the rings on when you are making wudu.
Mm-hmm, I see. A very quick question, Sheikh. What is the general law or Islamic law regarding illicit sexual intercourse with agreement? So the two partners agree to have that kind of intimacy, but what does Islam say about that? But it is illicit.
Right. Well, I think the answer is very easy to understand, because the Muslims, of course, Muslims all believe that without the reciting the formula of marriage contract, any kind of relationship remains to be illicit. And the illicit is illicit. Something which is forbidden is forbidden, okay?
Right. So, and does it have to be in Arabic, the formula?
The formula is it's okay, it's good to be in Arabic, but it's not mandatory.
Uh-huh.
Okay. If someone cannot recite Arabic, okay, he can recite the formula in his own language, provided that it conveys the same meaning as the formula in the Arabic language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but for consensual sexual relationship, of course, there's no. Islam does not, under any circumstances, allow such relationship.
Right.
Without marriage contract.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh. And thank you, my dear listeners, joining our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, whereby we try to deal with some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. With me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker, we bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم مجاب.
سميع بصير. لا إله إلا